Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, December 30th, 2015. So I have been told we are on a little bit earlier, or I guess significantly earlier than our normal broadcast time. Just because this is not supposed to be a long format broadcast, this is just a quick session, drop a few words, tipping my hat. One of our longtime listeners who generally hooks me up, I thought I would do them a solid by returning the favor and giving some commentary on one of the films that they sent me most recently. Make sure that I emphasize again, reading is way, way more important than watching television. Reading and writing, way more important than watching television. With all the things happening in the world right now, Bill Cosby having been charged in Pennsylvania for sexual misconduct, Ethan Couch, the affluenza white teen apprehended south of the border in Mexico, no charges in the Tamir Rice shooting death, all of the things that are happening in the world right now. That's just kind of tip of the iceberg of racism, white supremacy. Certainly, whatever is on the silver screen would be a much lower priority, and we will be devoting time and energy to discussing some of those themes. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be on for the year-end review. We've been doing that for a few years now. I think at least back to 2011 when we were doing a counter-racist review and starting to do it right at midnight or later in the evening. I've said consistently If anything, a few folks, you can choose to stay in, listen to the broadcast, as opposed to be out gallivanting in the streets and running around where you could potentially run into problems, conflict, chaos, where you can stay safe and constructive and just kind of review things that happened over the past 365 days and what we think we are looking forward to in 2016. I can only say, in assessing and kind of going back and looking at what some of the more important events of the past year, significant things that happened, constructive and non-constructive, it just looked like racists, white people, significantly intensified their attack on black people. And I can say for myself that having done these reviews over the past few years, I don't think there's been a time where I had kind of looked things that I had forgotten, things that happened, you know, in January of 2015, February, March, April, just kind of going back in and looking at the totality of what happened over the past 12 months. I was struck. I don't remember that being the case before, with just how bad things looked. I think people were saying Kendrick Lamar, he had a big 2015, lots of Grammy nominations and great new music that came out, a lot of it touching on racism, white supremacy. But they were using one of the songs off his new album where he says it's going to be all right. And man, just looking at everything that happened, it did not look all right to me. It looked really, really bad in terms of just the totality of what's happening, and even some things that I think kind of slipped under the radar that did not get as much attention as they should have. But that'll be Thursday evening. It's midnight Eastern, so I guess technically that would be Friday morning, but you know. And then for folks who are central, that would be 11 p.m. Thursday evening. If you're on the West Coast, that would be 9 p.m. Tomorrow evening. Description should be posted in, you know, a few hours. But tune in. Looking forward to hearing folks' thoughts, kind of looking back on what people thought was significant, constructive, and constructive things, again, that happened over the past 12 months and moving forward, what we think is going to be important to keep an eye on and or projects, you know, that people are looking to build up and getting things done to improve things for black people. Lord knows we have a lot of problems. We need great minds out there focusing and trying to solve problems. That's it. Again, this is just a quick broadcast, so if folks are listening in, if you have any quick, concise comments that you want to add, you should get your hand up because we're not doing the whole 3 hours. Also, make sure I get in. I think there was some difficulty with people trying to access the page via Black Talk Radio Network. Mr. Scotty Reed, founder of the BTR Network, he had said that they had increased traffic. I think there were some posts talking about white teens and some of their derelict behavior. And he even suspected that there might have been some interference to keep people from being able to go to the site easily and navigate, get to what, you know, things that you want to check out. But I think that problem has been corrected. I was able to access the page yesterday evening, and again today I was able to access the page, so it should have been corrected. But if you have any issues accessing the Black Talk Radio Network page, feel free to let me know. Again, you can always listen via TuneIn. You can listen live to the broadcast via TuneIn, and I can post that link or email it to you if you have any problems accessing that. That being said, again, this is kind of a hat tip to one of our listeners who generally will hook me up with films right when they come out, really high quality HD versions of films that have just been released to peruse, review. I think he hooked me up last year when we were doing the book study session on American Sniper, where I was able to get a copy of that right when it was released. Selma, Dear White People, lots of, you know, films that, you know, folks are talking about and trying to analyze the white supremacy within the content of the film. He shot me a copy of Creed, the new film with Sylvester Stallone and Michael B. Jordan. It's written and directed by Ryan Coogler, black male, building on the Rocky franchise. He shot it to me, and He'll send me films and just, you know, be like, hey, me and my wife, we're attempted counter-racist. And, you know, we try to break down and get the racist content out of these films or TV shows or whatever it is. If you have any thoughts that you want to share, that would be helpful as well. And I said, man, we have already invested a good chunk of time talking about the Rocky franchise on this program. The whole series of them, I think there are about five or six of them. I think this Creed, I think, is the seventh in the series of films. And I said, man, I don't know if it's worth doing a whole program, but I can at least give a quick word and a clip from some of the time that we have invested in talking about the high level of white supremacist content in these films over the last almost 50 years. I think it's exactly 39 years of filming that they have done with all of these different movies. But that in and of itself to me is astounding. Not that, you know, we should not be surprised about things happening under the system of white supremacy, but Sylvester Stallone is in what they say the winter of life. He is moving on off the stage, getting close to meeting his maker, and they still have got him in these boxing films. That, I mean, man, I think he was even interviewed. I think I saw one of those where he was even saying the same thing. Like, if you had told me that, you know, nearly 50 years would pass and we would still be doing these films, like, man, you gotta be joking. I can only say, I'm going to give a quick sound clip where Mr. Fuller kind of puts the genesis of this series in context, in my opinion, in a really great way. And people like Mr. Fuller, people that are a little bit older than myself, would be better in terms of giving some of the historical context to when this film series came out, because I wasn't born when the first one came out, so he was able to see some of the things that led up to when the first Rocky came out. But I can only emphasize, people, you know, who might say, what are you talking about? This film is racist, or this film supports the system of white supremacy. You just said that Ryan Coogler, black filmmaker, wrote and directed this film, which is true. And one of the main stars, Michael B. Jordan, black male. Folks remember him from Fruitvale Station, which was also a Ryan Coogler project. What do you mean that this film supports racism, white supremacy? Sylvester Stallone, he's not even boxing in this film. He's just training a black guy. What do you mean that this supports racism, white supremacy? I would start, number one, just the whole genesis of the franchise. We're talking about a series of films that started in 1976, right in the midst of what they call the Civil Rights Movement, the Black Power era, quote unquote, and the rise of dominant black athletes. This is the era where you have Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jim Brown. We talked about this. When I say we talked about this film repeatedly, we go into some of the detail with that. If you go back in our archives, we had Dr. John Hoberman on the program. We had Khalid Patterson on the program. We had Dr. Martin Kevorkian on the program. And we got into detail about a lot of these different elements that people should keep in mind for the totality of this franchise and where it started in 1976. And Dr. John Hoberman, who is a white man, in his book Darwin's Athletes, we've had him on the program repeatedly, where he says that you had sagging white morale at this point in the 1970s. White people didn't even allow black participation in athletics for a long time. And then all of a sudden you got loudmouth Muhammad Ali talking about racism and I'm not going to Vietnam and winning the heavyweight championship of the world. And as I said, Joe Frazier, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jim Brown, Juan Carlos and Tommy Smith at the Olympics. It's not just one person. You've got waves of all these black people coming and dominating professional sports at the highest levels, not just sitting on the bench, but being the dominant players. That really disrupted a lot of white people. And in my opinion, you still see that to this day with Serena Williams. Why you had all these people that were upset that she was the sportsman or the sports person of the year and saying that they should have gave it to a horse instead of her. All of these people that are upset about Floyd Mayweather Jr. and wishing anybody could have beaten him, just loathing the fact that this black male had an undefeated professional prize fighting career. The same thing with Tiger Woods. You could just go on down the line. LeBron James, Gabrielle Douglas. You see that to this day. And I would even submit that's why you had the creation. And I'm not the only one. I think there's quite a bit of scholarship on this. Why you had the creation of MMA and all these alternative sports that started popping up to give white people a venue where they could be dominant, where they could be champions. Even ESPN's The X Games, where you had all these other with alternative sports, as I said, that started popping up because we're just tired of seeing all these niggas dominate the NBA, the NFL, increasingly tennis, golf, even sports that, you know, are supposed to be synonymous with white supremacy. Even black people are taking over those sports. So that is the context going all the way back to 1976 where this film starts, and specifically with boxing, where you've had Muhammad Ali dominating and talking about racism, black Muslim hanging out with Malcolm X and Elijah Muhammad, and oh man, like we've had to tolerate this for a decade or so, and he's still around. 1976, Joe Frazier, lots of them, George Foreman, we've had to tolerate this. We don't have any more white heavyweight champions. Let's fictionalize something. Let's make a film where we can have a dominant white boxing champion, a Philadelphia legend. And for me, and we talked about this on the program before, just that fact alone, Joe Frazier is a native of Philadelphia, legend of Philadelphia. Joe Frazier won the heavyweight championship of the world, the first fighter to defeat Muhammad Ali and win the heavyweight championship. Joe Frazier was undefeated heavyweight champion of the world, beat Muhammad Ali at Madison Square Garden, and he's not the person that gets a statue and is idolized in Philadelphia. It's some made-up, fabricated white man. That's Rocky, the whole franchise continuing all the way to Creed that came out this month, and I think it opened the weekend that it opened, it made over $40 million. To get to this film specifically and how it just continues that legacy, obviously at this point Sylvester Stallone is too old to fight, even though they pulled that off the last time they released this film, I think in the mid-2000s, 2006, I think. But in this one, Creed, it's focusing on Apollo Creed's son, who is the black fighter that Rocky Balboa was fighting in the first two installments of this film franchise. And even the racism right there, it can't be that Apollo Creed, who was married in this film, it can't be that he had a child and he was married. It can't be that he had a child with his wife and his child wanted to grow up and be a boxer. No. It's got to be Apollo Creed was stepping out. You know, black people and their uncontrollable sexual desires. So he was stepping out. He had an affair and had this illegitimate child. And he dies before he even knows about this illegitimate black son of his. And so this black son is in all kinds of trouble. His black mother dies. He's fighting. And the film opens in a juvenile detention facility where we see tons of little black boys brawling and fighting one another, a la Ralph Ellison and Invisible Man, the Battle Royal, if you will. That's how it opens, with the main character, who's played by Michael B. Jordan, when he's like 12, I think. He's fighting another black child in this detention facility, and Apollo Creed's wife, who's played by Felicia Rashad, Bill Cosby, she comes in and decides to take him into her home. And even though this is not her child, but, you know, hey, my husband fathered this child, even though it's illicit, I'm going to go ahead and take in this this child and raise him like my own, her connection to her dead husband. So that's how it starts. And her son, he wants to fight. Apollo Creed's son, this is again played by Michael B. Jordan, he wants to be a fighter against his mother's wishes. She doesn't want him to fight. Apollo Creed was killed in the ring by a white man, I think in the fourth installment in this film franchise, so she doesn't want him to fight. He does it anyway against his basically black mother's wishes, and leaves her house to go and find Rocky in Philadelphia to train him, be his surrogate father, if you will, to be a fighter. We've seen this play out repeatedly. We talked about this in real life and in films. I think Mr. Scotty Reed pointed this out with Michael Sam, even though he didn't make it in the NFL, but he ended up going off to live with a white family to, you know, train him, stay with him so that he could do his football thing. This was played up big time in The Blind Side with Sandra Bullock, with Michael Orr's character. Long history continuing on to this day. I think even Gabrielle Douglas having to leave her mother's home. The ballerina, I forgot her name. I think it's Brittany. I'll check in a second. But the ballerina who's Misty Copeland. I think the same thing where she had to leave her mother's home and go and be around all these white people to do her thing. Long running narrative. If you're going to be successful, you got to get away from these black people. You're going to need a white person who can train you up and show you how to be great. Polish your skills, refine you so that you can be awesome, so that you can be the best that you can possibly be. Same theme that plays out here. Michael B. Jordan, Apollo Creed's son, his love interest in the film is played by Tasha Thompson. If folks have seen the film or recognize the name, this is the non-white female. She was in Dear White People. And that's what I think of when I see her, when I saw this film. That's every time I see her character, that's what I'm flashing back to. And that's something that I've touched on before. If we're talking about films or movies, that you should be cognizant of the actor or director. You should be cognizant of their body of work, like other films that they're known for, roles that they're known for, or if they got awards or, you know, just whatever. Just kind of looking at the type of roles that they typically are cast in or the type of projects that they typically do. Michael B. Jordan, I think of Fruitvale Station, even Ryan Coogler, because, you know, he directed that as well, wrote and directed Fruitvale Station. And I think that's something that was on my mind a lot in watching Creed, that all of the main characters, I didn't like any of the films that they were involved in previously. I didn't like any of the Rocky films. I didn't like Fruitvale Station. I didn't like Dear White People. And not just that these films were not pleasing to watch, these films are saturated in racism, white supremacy. I'm not, you know, going to deviate to talk about all that, but that was heavily on my mind in watching this. And I think we've talked about before when the love interest, the beautiful female representation, who's supposed to be a black female, actually is someone who has a white parent or a white grandparent, someone who doesn't quite look like they have two black parents, four black grandparents, someone who looks like they have less melanin and have phenotypical features that are closer to what we identify with people who are classified as white. I think that is hugely important. Her biography, if you go to Internet Movie Database, it says that she is of African American, Mexican, Caucasian, and Central American descent. In Dear White People, they played it that she had a white parent, which is totally believable. And she might. It didn't say that specifically on Internet Movie Database, so I'm not sure if she has a white parent specifically. But clearly, she looks like there has been some quote-unquote miscegenation in there somewhere along the way. And I think that's hugely important. There's even a documentary film that talks about this. I know Pam has talked about it as well. The documentary, I'm Biracial, Not Black, Damn It, where, in my view, racists skillfully, they know one of the long-term ramifications of sexually exploiting non-white people, particularly black people, the offspring, we can skillfully use them against non-white people. They're victims too, but this is, in my view, it's hugely important. It's a huge part of what they call colorism. That color complex, which has been really debilitating in us being able to be more effective in working against racism, white supremacy, and bickering and squabbling with one another about who's lighter, who's darker, all of that skillfully promoting lighter complexion, less melanated non-white people to say these are going to be the representatives of black people, and particularly when we start talking about attractiveness and beauty, that we're going to promote lighter complexion, less melanated non-white people to represent black people. I think that's a huge element of the film that's right there. And as I said, my mind just kept going back to Dear White People because that's a big element of that film too, with Tessa Thompson's character. Anyway, As I said, I'm not going to go through the whole film. It's with this franchise, there's no way that you can move away from this fictionalized, worshipped white man, the religion of white supremacy, where he gets a statue in Philadelphia and is just revered, greatest boxer of all time, just total hogwash. I mean, in a city, we're not talking about Joe Frazier, we're not talking about Muhammad Ali, we're not talking about George Foreman, we're talking about some made up white man, and just continuing that whole idea. And even though he's not fighting, he's supposed to be the representation of boxing greatness, and we go to him again to be the surrogate father to this illegitimate black child, so you can train him up and get him to be a grand boxer, a grand champion. It just continues. At any rate, I wanted to make sure I got in the segment where Mr. Fuller was talking about one of the important elements of the Rocky series that's even present in this one. Sylvester Stallone, he's older. He gets diagnosed with cancer in the film, and I think that has some application to what's happening, system of racism, white supremacy right now. There are many, many reports that talk about the fertility issues that whites are having, and I think they even call it the graying of the white population, because white people, they're not having as many children, so the collective white population, in aggregate, they're getting older because they're not having as many children, so you don't have as many, you don't have as high a percentage of younger white people in the total white collective. So they're saying that the white group is aging. And that element in this film was Sylvester Stallone being older, and he gets diagnosed with cancer, and he doesn't want to fight it, and he's complaining and grumpy and saying, you know, my wife died, and, you know, all my friends have died, and I'm older, and, you know, all my heroics and stuff are in the past, and I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to fight cancer. I'm willing to, you know, shuffle off and meet my maker. And this theme of you got to be motivated, you got to stay in there, you got to fight, you got to fight, you got to fight, particularly for white people, staying motivated, focused on what you are supposed to be doing, dominating, maintaining the system of white supremacy. And that's one of the main elements that Mr. Fuller touched on when he discussed the film Rocky. With that, I will get in the sound clip. This is from years ago. And if folks are more interested in hearing some of the details about the Rocky franchise and specific films and the history of how it came out, I have the link in the description to the program where I kind of condensed, collated, if you will, some of the different segments over the years where we talked about this film. Again, Dr. John Hoberman and his book, Darwin's Athletes, Khalid Patterson, who's a black male, his book, You Mean There's Race in My Movie, where we talked about this, and Dr. Martin Kevorkian as well, his book, Color Monitors. He is a white, admitted white supremacist white man, Dr. Martin Kevorkian, but he was on the program many, many times, and we talked about, with all of these different individuals, we talked about the Rocky film franchise, and they all gave different elements of how racism, white supremacy is present in the film, and even the significance, as I said, of why this film franchise was created in the first place. But Mr. Fuller will touch on that. His website, again, is producejustice.com, producejustice.com. So this is from years ago. We were talking to Mr. Fuller about not even about Rocky. That's the wild thing. This conversation, we were just talking about racism in general and employment, specifically white people. Mr. Fuller said one of his observations was that white people were not hiring other white people. And he goes to talk about that. And again, motivation. George Lincoln Rockwell is brought up, very important character. We talked about him back in the archives as well, but you can go look online to see who George Lincoln Rockwell was, another prominent person in that same time, 60s and 70s. So I think he died in the late 1960s, but right before, just a few years before the first Rocky installment came out in 1976, but very important figure in the 1960s, in the middle of the so-called civil rights movement, so-called black power era. I think they have some videos on YouTube where George Lincoln Rockwell is having a debate with Stokely Carmichael, a.k.a. Kwame Ture. With that, this is Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. giving his views on racism, white supremacy, employment practices, the importance of whites staying motivated, and all of this will segue nicely to Rocky. Context of white supremacy.
You know, I just can't afford to have five white people walking around here, even though they're white, and I'm, you know, and I'm trying to help them and all like that, but they're not doing nothing but getting in the way. Just making what they want a top salary for doing nothing. See, it ain't like they will take a salary cut. See, because you've got two generations of white people now who are used to doing nothing. And some of their children are coming up behind them, expecting to do nothing. And that's where a problem is. See, they want to go to work and sit with their feet on the desk all day. Put their hands behind their head and lean back in the swivel chair. Look out the window. And draw top salary. It used to be a whole ocean of white people, really a whole world of white people who could do that. I was coming along, that was standard. But see, it's getting harder and harder to do that now. So white people are not hiring white people for a very logical reason. White people are too expensive. Guy who's trying to start out some little manufacturing company and whatnot. All of his white friends come in there looking for a job, but all of them want to be executives right from day one. The mathematics, the logistics of that, it doesn't work. Say, well, look, well, somebody's got to be down there doing some work, you know. Oh, no, you know, we all have friends and whatnot, you know. Say, well, you know, hey, even on the plantation, you had to have a white man out there, I mean, to supervise the black people. Otherwise, the black people don't know what to do. They stand right there waiting on the boss. You don't even want to go out in the sun, you know. And they tell them that. But even back in the plantation days, you know, we didn't have, everybody didn't sit on up on the porch sipping mint julep. If we had to have some white guys that went down there to check on the niggas. And you don't even want to go check on the niggas. No, Sam will, you know. Say, well, how are you going to get any work out of them? And you're not going to even go down there and tell them what to do. Well, that's too much work. See? And you have a number of white people who are just like that. Yeah. In other words, you're telling me to go down there and work with niggas. It's almost the same, you know. I'm down there, I got to stand over them all day. It's hot out there. See, they used to have a whole cadre of white people who were willing to do that. Oh, yeah, give me a whip. I'd go down there and put them boys in line. But see, while he's whipping and whatnot, he's also out there in the sun himself. All right? He's out there sweating and getting all dusty and whatnot. You have about three generations of white people now who don't want to get their hands dirty at all. They don't want to go to the field and be no field supervisor. They say, well, how are you going to tell all them Latinos, I mean, you know, how much lettuce to put on the wagons and all like that? Well, you know, hey, give them computers. No, that's exactly what we don't want to do. You can be educating them. You know? See, that's what started happening in the late 1960s in South Africa. See, that's why you start having disturbances in South Africa. Because white guys got to the place, see, that they had a law in South Africa, never let a kaffir, a black person, handle any kind of machinery. Don't let them do nothing. Don't let them push a button. Don't let them know nothing about machinery. But see, some white supervisors start getting lazy, you know. They'll say, well, you know, send Waku out of there, you know. You get on the phone and call Waku and say, Waku, I'm going to sleep another 3 hours. I'll be in at 10 o'clock. I'm supposed to be there at 7. I haven't had enough sleep. So you go and open the gate. And that's how it started. So Waku out there, you know, in the shanty, I mean, he would get on his bicycle and go in and open up the gate. That's how it got started. And then by this time next year, he's not only opening the gate, but he's going in there and starting the machinery up, which was a no-no. That was against the law. But a lot of white guys was breaking the law. Of course, they got lazy. Okay? Next thing you know, the guy's coming in at noon, or sometimes in the afternoon. Because now he got five black guys in there who are really running the place. See, they've been there since 6:30 in the morning because they're used to hardship. And these are actual stories. These things start happening all over South Africa. Okay? And that's when they start having real problems. Because, see, I mean, you know, once the black guys start learning how to do things and whatnot, then they start talking about unions and all this and going on strike. And the white guys was coming dependent. And some of the old heads told them. Some of the old Dutchmen that have been around like forever said, I told you, that, yeah, you can do that for a short while, but you get in the habit of doing that. Next thing you know, you won't even know how to run the stuff. They will know everything about running your business. And you'll be in there asking them, where is this and where is that? And I have seen enough of that to know how that works, too. It's very simple, you know. You just turn something over to somebody else, and next thing you know, they'll know more than you do. That's in anything. You know, you run the car repair shop, and you get to the place where the guy who came in don't know nothing about your cars. But you start showing him, well, this is a carburetor, and this is this, and this is that, and the oil changes, this is how you do it back here, and all like that. Then you get to the place where you don't do none of it, whereas you were doing most of it. Okay. Or you were supervising, having parts of it done by different people so that none of them learned very much. But you turn that over to someone, the whole shop, the next thing you do, and if they're used to a lot of hard work and you are not, because you get lazy, next thing you know, they know more about the place than you do. That's why George Lincoln Rockwell, of the so-called American Nazi Party back in the 1970s, he used to make speeches right down here in Washington in front of the White House all the time, wearing swastikas and everything. And he used to say in his speeches, say, see these black guys out here with these jackhammers and whatnot? He said, if the white man keeps doing this, having these black guys out here doing all this work, running the jackhammers and running the forklifts and all like that, while he sits, the white man sits up here, right in these office buildings right here in Washington, looking down on them from an air-conditioned building, he said, history has shown that when they keep doing that, they will become weak, and that black guy that they're laughing at out there in the hot sun will become strong. Said, and Adolf Hitler has warned us of this. The Germans are supposed to do their own work. So you get out there and do some sweating yourself. Otherwise, you will become too soft in body, and little by little, you become soft in mind. If you cannot let black people do all the work, and then little by little, they start doing some of the intelligent work, and so the next thing you know, you look up and they're doing all the work, both the paperwork and the heavy lifting, and they become a strong people. And you will become just some flabby guy who don't know nothing about how to do nothing but sit up and you know, and have coffee all day. Now, George Lincoln Rockwell used to say that. Now, I had never even thought of it like that until he said it. But that does make sense. And that's something that's been happening all over the world, slowly but surely. And to that extent, the white supremacist system has been weakened. One thing I noticed when I was in the Army, and that is, you know, I'm complaining about, you know, 5:30 in the morning. Man, this is rough. Okay? Until the wee hour, you know, until almost, you know, 10 o'clock at night, I mean, that's when they tell us we find a release. You know, I'm up at 5:30 out here doing calisthenics and all like that. But then I guess I must have been in the Army about a month. And it hit me all of a sudden. I said, yeah, I do get up at 5:30. Because that sergeant, that white sergeant comes in there banging on stuff and say, okay, everybody up, you know. Everybody out in formation in 15 minutes. Or you're going to be, it's going to be hell to pay for whoever's the last one out. Okay? So we're scrambling. Okay? But then it hit me one day. I said, yeah, he's getting us up at 5:30, which means he's got to get up at 3. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I began to appreciate the way that, you know, that was going. Because I said, yeah, he's out here dogging us around every morning and all like that. You know, 5:30 in the morning, waking us up and whatnot. But then it struck me. Man, he's all spanned and polished and whatnot. When he comes in there waking us up, I say, that means he had to get up at least an hour and a half before we got up. See, and that's what Hitler was talking about. And that's what George Lincoln Rockwell was talking about. Hey, you can't get weaker than your subjects. You fool around and get weaker than your subjects ain't going to be weak. They're going to be stronger than you.
You think that's the way this system can eventually be defeated? Just white people?
If they keep going in that direction, but history has shown that they stop. Because, see, right behind George Lincoln Rockwell making those kind of speeches everywhere he went, that's when the jogging craze started. Almost right on that time.
The jogging craze?
That's when it started. Wasn't no white party out here jogging up and down the street like you see? They've been doing that for 2-3 generations now. You see people jogging all the time in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see none of that before George Lincoln Rockwell was storming all over the place, warning, you know, white people about that. Say, you better get off your behinds and stop being so soft.
Wow.
You know, you can sit there with them behind those screens all day long and, you know, and do nothing but drink coffee and get big stomachs and all that. Say, you better break out of that. You got to be strong in mind and body. That's the German way. Said Hitler criticized the English, and he said he definitely criticized the French. He said the French ain't nothing. I don't pay no attention to Frenchmen at all. Said they're a disgrace to the white race.
Wow.
Yeah. Sitting around patting and feeling all day and sipping wine, you know. Yeah, that's why we beat them in no time. You know, they didn't know what hit them when we went to France. Up here reciting poetry and all that. You know, hell with that. You know, better get out there and do some work.
Wow, I've never heard anyone comment on jogging and when that trend started. And...
Yes, the jogging trend started in the 1970s. And people like George, he wasn't the only one, people like George Lincoln Rockwell was going around saying, we're getting too soft, we're getting too flabby. Look at us, waddling up and down the street and thinking that we're all that, you know, we're powerful and all like that. You said you're getting silly. So your body is getting weak and your mind is going to follow. See, well, you keep a strong mind and a strong body, then that's a real Nazi. Your body got to be able to stand up to a whole lot of punishment. Got to be able to march across the Alps and think nothing of it.
Wow. We were just talking about the Rocky films with Sylvester Stallone, and that's like a huge theme in that movie. you can't get out of shape, you can't get lazy, and just sitting around.
And that's when they made the movie Rocky.
Wow! Oh, that's right. You know? That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Wow!
Yeah, get out there. I mean, and they built a song around it. I mean, they had Rocky running all over Philadelphia.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Wow. Wow. Rocky, 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 Rocky. context of white supremacy. I still hear the songs from the Rocky films all the time. How much of an impact that had in terms of racism, white supremacy, and having what I would call a cultural resonance with whites. Because I hear Eye of the Tiger and some of the other songs over the history of the franchise that became just really, really signature from that. I hear them in other films, and I definitely hear them at sporting contests and what have you. I think some years back, it's like 2011, we first were talking about the Rocky franchises. I think as soon as we did that program, different people wrote in and said that they were hearing the song here, hearing the song there. We opened this program up today that was Justice doing a recital of Eye of the Tiger on her flute. She was in band, and that was one of the songs that they were practicing to play for their concert was Eye of the Tiger. It has saturated in terms of particularly this area of the world, the United States. The culture, and you'll just hear it all the time. And I think that resonance is because of what that film symbolizes for whites. The power of just this fictional, the great white hope, if you will, that we can have this white dominant athlete go in and beat up and brawl down all these black guys, beat them down, no problem. Championship and staying motivated, as Mr. Fuller touched on, staying motivated. You can't get weak, you can't get flabby, you got to stay focused on maintaining dominance over black people. Huge theme that runs throughout the films. And even as I said, that motivation, the motivational point is still in Creed, where Rocky loses his motivation for a moment, but he gets it back. Gotta be motivated. If folks have anything that they want to get in, as I said, we're not doing the whole program. This is just a quick snippet, as I said, kind of a hat tip to a listener who shares a lot of films with me that as just as they are released and what have you. So I'm kind of in the loop about what's out and what people are talking about. And he encourages if I have any feedback. There you go. Feedback for Creed. Folks saw it. I'm sure a lot of people are at least aware of it. It seems like it did pretty well at the box office. So I suspect that some folks either went to see it or they know about it, that sort of thing. I would again encourage no movies, not going to the theater for black people. That's one thing that we can do with regards to economics in terms of our time and energy. Black people, notoriously, we just don't go to the movies. We're not going to spend our hard-earned coins to go and see some racist nonsense like this or anything else that happens to be out. We're just not going to do it. There's so many other avenues where you can catch these films. You can wait a few months and they'll be available at the library for free. You can just go check out the DVD or what have you. I'm sure a lot of people have Netflix accounts and other things, and they're just online. You can stream a lot of this content. You don't really have to wait very long. In addition to the fact that I think we have so many problems that film viewing should be pretty low on our list of priorities and how we invest our time and energy. So that's just one small thing that we could do in terms of working against racism, white supremacy. But if folks had any quick comments that they wanted to get in based on what they heard, the number 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you have anything that you want to get in. We'll probably just be in for like another 5 minutes and signing out. I'm still trying to prep and make sure that we're all set for tomorrow's broadcast. Again, our counter-racist review, a look back at 2015 tomorrow evening. That's Thursday. It'll be midnight Eastern, so I guess technically that's Friday, but, you know, whatever. Midnight Eastern, 11 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Pacific tomorrow evening. Looking forward. Hopefully folks will not be out and about running around. You can be someplace safe so that you don't have any unnecessary problems or conflict, run-ins with enforcement officers or any other of the chaos that's going to be rampant tomorrow evening. But we will be here to review what, man, it was an unpleasant year. Just reviewing all the things that happened and things that I regard as being pretty important that, you know, we should be not forgetting and kind of reviewing the significance of what happened. It was a rough, rough year, but that'll be tomorrow. If folks have anything, feel free. If not, we'll get ready to wrap things up. Hope some constructive insight on the significance of these films. And again, we went more into detail. This is just supposed to be a quick snippet. I know a lot of folks were not listening to The Cows, didn't even know we existed back in 2011. So I'm sure some folks had not even heard that snippet with Mr. Fuller, not to mention some of the other clips. As I said, we've had quite a few people, authors, scholars who've come on the program, white and non-white, who have shared their views about this film franchise and the significance of these films in relation to the system of white supremacy, why they're so popular, why they're still even making them. This is one that I, in my view, they're going to probably keep making these films. I would not be surprised at all that they eventually just recast someone as Sylvester Stallone and just start all over again, recast Apollo Creed, and they can start from the very beginning. Whites have a history of doing that sort of thing as well, with franchises that, you know, made a lot of money, where they just go back, start all over again, pick new characters, and do it all over. That would not shock me at all. Or if they have some other permutations for how they want to deal with this, if they pick it up with Rocky's son, he decides that he wants to box or give it a go or what have you, just anything. I would be willing to bet a good chunk of change that this is not going to be the last Rocky installment, that you will see this again. It's such an important film franchise and the history of white supremacy and just reviving, resuscitating that legacy of the great white hope, Italian stallion, Rocky Balboa. At any rate, can't think anything else that I wanted to make sure I got in. Other than we will be back for the book study session on Friday. The half has never been told. Hopefully we won't have all the interference that we had to endure this past Friday. But that'll be session number 4, picking up on chapter 3. Looking forward to that. The compensatory call-in will be Saturday, normal time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. I thought there was one other thing I was going to make sure that I got in. Mr. Fuller's website, producejustice.com. Get that in again. If you have not got your word guide, codebook, producejustice.com, producejustice.com. Always great to hear from Mr. Fuller. Great expertise, particularly since he's been focused on this problem for a number of years. Yeah, I can't remember what it was. Mine must be failing me, victim of white supremacy. I thought there was one other thing I was going to make sure I got in. Oh, I know the documentary film that I referenced with regards to the character in the Creed film, Tessa Thompson, in terms of her being the representation of the black female love interest, and she clearly less melanated. I'm not sure if she has a white parent or not, but the documentary film that kind of talks about some of those issues is I'm Biracial, Not Black, Damn It. And it's produced by Carolyn Battle Cochran, who does have one white parent, one non-white parent. She had wrote me a letter before. I was trying to get her on the program years ago, and she wrote me a letter where she detailed a lot of her views around this issue. But that's one of the core themes that she brings out in that film, where racists consistently are using victims of racism, non-white people, who have a white parent, where they're using them in this manner, where they become representative of black people, and whites are more comfortable with that because they are less melanated, and they have features that are a little bit, they resemble, they're a bit closer to what we generally associate with white phenotypes. But if folks want to check out documentary, I'm Bi, and that's the title, I'm Biracial, Not Black, Damn It. I always get a giggle out of that title when folks mention it, bring it up. With that, hope it was a constructive investment of your time and energy. We'll be back in a little over 24 hours, again, reviewing some of the things that happened, the Bill Cosby situation, Tamir Rice. A lot of things are happening right at the end of 2015, as well as some of the things that have happened throughout the last 12 months, but we'll be here tomorrow. If you get confused, have any problems, as I said, I know there were some brief issues accessing the Black Talk Radio Network page, but I think that's been taken care of. You should be able to access everything okay. But if you do have problems, feel free to drop an email. Until untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter @untiljustice. Just let me know if you have any suggestions, gripes, complaints, whatever the case may be, and we'll try to guest suggestions as well. We'll try and get it taken care of. Invest if you think the broadcast is constructive. racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener supported counter racist radio. You hit the blog, you'll see the PayPal button in the top right corner. If you're not in the PayPal, drop us an email and we'll get you a physical mailing address. Big thanks to all the folks who have invested down through the years and helped us remain on the air for nearly 7 years. With that, thanks again to all the folks for tuning in. I know we were on significantly early, but you can catch it in the podcast. Should be available within an hour or two on iTunes, and you can download, stream at your leisure. We will be back tomorrow. Thanks again for tuning in. Remain safe and constructive. I would encourage sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. We already have enough problems. We do not need anything that's going to add to our difficulties as black people, non-white people, victims of racism. You definitely do not want to be around intoxicated whites. That is an extremely dangerous environment. It can go from zero to lethal in seconds. And I would even encourage extreme caution, and you should probably avoid being around even intoxicated non-white people. I've just seen too much evidence that those type of environments, they are just rife with conflict and easily avoidable problems. We already got too many problems as black people, victims of racism. Let's not add to our worries. Again, buckle up every time you get behind the wheel. We want to do everything we can to minimize contact with enforcement officers. You never know when it's going to be a Daniel Holtzclaw, Darren Wilson that's out and about. If you are a passenger, pedestrian, driver, you do not want to be intoxicated or under the influence at all, because they're just looking to make life difficult for us at all times. We have to be cognizant of that, make sure that we're lucid so that we can make the best possible decisions to take care of ourselves and other people that we care about and might be responsible for. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.